googlemotherfuckers.podbean.com.
It's Google, motherfuckers.
Welcome to the Call to Bean, you cop-sucking motherfucking dog shit ass cunt bitch.
Welcome to Ian Ellis.podbean.com. I'm your host, Ian Ellis. I'm a comedian in the Chicagoland area. This podcast is the B-side to my material. It's how the material gets woven together and developed. I always thought, like, as a fan, like if Doug Stanhope did this or if Mitch Hedberg did this, I would love to hear all those parts. Like, I'm a big fan of Patrice O'Neill, and you hear some of his classic bits. They come from conversations he had on podcasts and on the Opie and Anthony show. And I love knowing the history of it. This is a strange point in time because there's this thing called a comedy nerd, which it really developed with podcasts becoming more prevalent, particularly like Mark Maron and Petey Holmes, old Pete Holmes. Those guys really explored the world of comedy. And Chris Hardwick. I don't like Chris. I should like him. Like, I love Doctor Who and comic books and video games, and G4 was all I watched when I was in college. I have every reason in the world to like him, but he's just so snarky, and for some reason that rubs me the wrong way. I'm like, ugh. And when I watched his special Mandroid, it seemed like he had a point of reference rather than a point of view, which this episode is going to be called Comedy Literacy, and I'm going to get into sort of the mathematics and behind the scenes of comedy and why I do what I do and what I do. But this podcast, I've been doing this for 2 or 3 years now, and I'm realizing stuff. I'm realizing I gotta intro the show. I gotta explain what it is I do. I put out new material every week. The girls from Kill Tony do that. They do a new minute each week. My show's been around longer than Kill Tony. Whenever they're on a podcast, people are like, oh my god, I'm blown away. I can't believe a new minute. Well, I do a new, like, 5 minutes a week, and at a higher level, which I'll break down and I'll explain. So if you're a comedy fan, where you're like, I want to see comedy done at the highest level. I'm into the mathematics and the technical part of it. I want to see an artist do their thing. I'm the dude you should be checking out. But most people aren't like that. Most people, they're going out because they want to have a good time. And the audience is something comedians really don't consider enough. Like, your audience, it's people that they work 40 plus hours a week. They're in credit card debt. They're looking for love, or they're trying to raise kids and family, and they come out because they want to relax for a night. This is their date night, their night to get out. And the stuff that you talk about is the stuff that they're going to talk about on the way home. Who's good, who's not, what'd you think about that idea? And if you have some good insight into relationships, that'll become like the inside jokes in their relationships as they're flirting and, you know, enjoying their time together. And comedians a lot of times will get wrapped up in what they're doing and what they're trying to say and completely forget that what they're doing is something that's going to be digested by the audience. And that your goal is to take care of the audience and to make them laugh. It's a partnership. This is something we'll get into. So for my podcast, it comes with instructions. You need to turn up to listen to this. This isn't just listen to whenever. Go out on the porch, go to your basement, your garage, your man cave, wherever. Your lady cave. Wherever you hang out, and pour yourself a drink and smoke yourself some smoky smoke. Whatever you do to relax and unwind. Hopefully you're not doing anything like cocaine and heroin. I don't think you'll get it. This isn't for you. Go to rehab. You're hurting yourself. It's too much. Calm it down. You need to be able to handle your high. But this is one, if you smoke and you listen, I think you'll enjoy it more and you'll get more out of it, because that's what I do, is I assemble it and put it together. My buddy Lane, who's been following me for a long time, working with me for a long time, he gives me the most notes on my podcast. He's the one that's like, first of all, you gotta introduce it, because some stranger coming in is just like, what the fuck? What is this? It's like an auditory acid trip. I really like vlogs on YouTube and these things that, like, break down very complex ideas into very simple ways. And a lot of times that's what I'm trying to do in my stand-up. I gotta save all of this for after the intro. But then, you know, I try to bring out these complex ideas in my stand-up. And I like to edit in some of those audio clips, historically, so that the audience has context information, so that you have access to the same information that I have. I don't like people that are like, I know it all, and you could never know what I know. I want you to know everything I know. I want you to be better than me. I'm doing the best I can. Here's the best stuff I could find. Hopefully, you know, you're able to digest this, and you already know this, or, you know, if we're going to change the world, we need the best minds working at it. And if you haven't heard this stuff, if this is information that you haven't come across before, I'm happy I could be the first one to show this to you. A lot of Alan Watts and Huey P. Newton and Gandhi and Martin Luther King. So I like to do a vlog style of putting that information in there and put my comedy in there and have some music going with it, because I'm jamming out when I'm listening to my podcast. I relax and I take in this massive download of information, and I sit there and I process it. It helps me figure out what I'm trying to say and why I'm trying to say it. And it's like painting a picture. It's a work of art, which is so highfalutin and gay. One thing about comedy is it really beats the preciousness out of you. I originally went to art school, and, you know, when you're drawing stuff and painting stuff, it's, well, I have the most skill. You turn into, like, a real phony asshole. The worst is the fashion industry. I think the reason Kanye West is going crazy is he hangs out with too many fashion people, and they're the most vapid, hollow, awful human beings on the planet. Anyway, so within this podcast, you're going to get, hopefully, some deep information, some audio clips, context clues. You're going to get some music. You're going to get some new stand-up comedy. And lately, it's been me talking with Leroy as we drive home from comedy at the end of the night. When he heads back to L.A., my man Grady Plus from the Eskimo Bros, he's probably going to join me. And it'll be me and him talking on the way home. And just exploring different ideas or talking about how the night went. The setup of the show. This week, no stand-up comedy. Leroy was banned from the Comedy Shrine for the second time. And that's something I'm going to talk about when I have him here to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it without him. But there was an incident, controversy. So we'll talk about that. And then we were going to go to this club called Riddles instead. And they were doing a showcase night. So our next option was to drive to the city, and I'd rather die. I'm done driving to the city. I live out in the suburbs of Chicago, and the city is like, you drive an hour, and then you wait 3 hours to do a 3 to 4 minute spot at a shitty open mic where nobody's paying attention and nobody gives a shit. And then you drive, you know, for me to take Leroy home and come home, it'd be like another 2 hours driving around. All of that energy is not worth getting off my 3 to 4 minutes in a low-quality environment. I'm a comic. I work in comedy clubs. Like, I want to make a real audience laugh. I don't want to make just the comics laugh, which is something we'll get into. It's going to be all about comedy literacy and my point of view on comedy. But for now, drink something, smoke something, chill out, and enjoy the podcast. Here's some music, and then we're going to talky-talk, and then we'll call it an episode. All right.
Say going crazy, and we've seen this before, but I'm doing pretty good as far as geniuses go, and I'm doing pretty hood in my pink polo. Nigga, please, how you gonna say I ain't no low head? I'm going crazy, and we've seen this before, but I'm doing pretty good as far as geniuses go, and I'm doing pretty hood in my pink polo. Nigga, please, how you gonna say I ain't no low head?
Welcome to the cul-de-sac, this is where the street end. I am just a rapper, I ain't got the time for speaking. Niggas stay weak like tornado and a tree branch, and never have a weekday, my life's a long weekend. Fucking with you raw, bitch, my mouth should get tested. Sleeping on a nigga, hope you feel well rested. Gambino stay on, can't nobody pull the cord out. A nigga fucked up like a hang gliding whorehouse. Sick boy, yeah, the click on deck. Yes, I rap up, sir, got the game upset. And they rap about the jewelry, the weed they smoke. And I rap about my life and niggas think it's a joke. Nah, I only put real on a nigga. See the money try and steal on a nigga. Yes, I'm on fire, you can feel it on a nigga. Step away from the heat, they should kill it on a nigga. Treat niggas like pussy, go hard on them. Watch the swagger get swiped like a car bottom. The swag's unique, I don't even worry about them. I got the tortoise shell frames and the Argyle. You wouldn't
Kardashian. Drop hot shit, yeah, my mouth's a laxative. Born to be the greatest, this is not by accident.
They say going crazy, and we seen this before. But I'm doing pretty good as far as geniuses go. And I'm doing pretty hood in my pink polo. Nigga, please, how you gonna say I ain't no low head? I'm going crazy, and we seen this before. But I'm doing pretty good as far as geniuses go. And I'm doing pretty hood in my pink polo. Nigga, please, how you gonna say I ain't no low head? Fresh off the plane, konnichiwa, bitches turn around another plane. My passport on Pippin, asked for it, I did it. That asshole done did it, talked it, then he lived it. Spit it, then he shit it. I don't need right tears, I might bounce ideas. But only I could come up with some shit like this. I done played the underdog my whole career. Nigga, please, how you gonna say I ain't no low head? Cause my Dior got me more my dough head. I'm insulted, you should go ahead and bow so hard till your knees hit your forehead. And the flow just hit cold red. Top 5 MCs, you ain't gotta remind me. Top 5 MCs, you gotta rewind me. I'm high up on the line, you could get behind me. But my head's so big, you can't sit behind me.
They say going crazy, and we seen this before. But I'm doing pretty good as far as geniuses go. And I'm doing pretty hood in my pink polo.
Nigga, please, how you gonna say I ain't no low head? I'm going crazy, and we seen this before. But I'm doing pretty good as far as geniuses go. And I'm doing pretty hood in my pink polo. Nigga, please, how you gonna say I ain't no low head?
I'm a genius, I ain't gotta fake shit. My cup runneth over, you can take sips. I'm in a spa, white robe like a racist. Niggas can't see me, I will pay for your LASIK. Fuck what you heard, bitch, I'm flyer than you ever seen. My wallet make paper, call it evergreen. Ashy to classy, finally got some Vaseline. Live inside a sauna cause I always got my self-esteem. Name in your mouth, and it seems as though I struck a nerve. I never fit in like my penis in these tiny girls. Was different from these other guys. When I wrote for 30 Rock, I was under 25. These other rappers wanna fade into the background. I'ma stand out when these niggas done sat down. I always pack heat, yeah, my mouth need a pat down. Money, girls, clothes, I don't worry about that now.
They say going crazy, and we seen this before. But I'm doing pretty good as far as geniuses go. And I'm doing pretty hood in my pink polo. Nigga, please, how you gonna say I ain't no low head? I'm going crazy, and we seen this before. But I'm doing pretty good as far as geniuses go. And I'm doing pretty hood in my pink polo. Nigga, please, how you gonna say I ain't no low head? It's what y'all been waiting for, ain't it? Well, people pay paper for, damn it. They can't stain it, they want something new. So let's get reacquainted. Became the hood favorite, I can't even explain it. But I'm going crazy, and we seen this before. But I'm doing pretty good as far as geniuses go. And I'm doing pretty hood in my pink polo. Nigga, please, how you gonna say I ain't no low head?
Hey, so my homie Toys from the Eskimo Brothers, the Eskimo Bros, we were having a meeting about, like, what kind of audience do we want to have, you know, what are we doing here? Let's get serious about this. And I was like, I want the hardcore comedy fans, I want the comedy nerds, I want the people that appreciate it, see it as the art form. And he was like, Ian, if that's your audience, you might as well quit now, because you ain't going to, like... It's a very small world. It's a niche market to really be into stand-up comedy. I just watched After Porn 2 on Netflix. It's pretty good. And I had no idea that most porn stars went and danced and they were strippers. And that's how they made their... It's very much like being a comedian. Like, you do the TV shows at your porn so that you can get, you know, more audience members when you're doing stand-up, which is just stripping. And I used to think everybody on TV is a millionaire. It turns out not so much. Like, one comic I know, he's been on TV more than any other comedian, and his estimated worth is like $400,000. This is someone that's like 20, 30 years in the game. You're like, those high hopes of being a millionaire, like, that's not your average comic. That's Kevin Hart right now. Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, Cat Williams, Jeff Foxworthy, and Larry the Cable Guy, and Dane Cook. That's it. It's a very small world. I don't even know if there's 10 of them. It was originally Dice. Dice and Eddie and Richard and Carlin. The all-fathers of stand-up comedy. Anyway, most comics aren't making that kind of money. So the money you make is either if you get a writing gig on a TV show, which is very nice, or if you do warm-up for a TV show, that's an amazing amount of money, or if you tour a lot and you do clubs. When you're starting out, most of those opportunities are incredibly hard to come by. Now, what I love about the rap world is that what matters the most is if you're good. I really like that. It doesn't matter if you've been around for years. It doesn't matter if you have the most money. Some kid can come up out of nowhere and just be the best rapper ever. And suddenly, they're the king. They're the one we care about. Because it's not about all the trappings. It's about who is the best. Like, who's giving me the most here? Comedy kind of has that. It is very even. At the end of the day, Neil Brennan and Dave Chappelle are trying to do the same thing I'm trying to do. Stand up there and say something relevant and important for an hour and be funny. And they got to fill that hour of space just like I got to fill that hour of space. And at the end of the day, one of us could do it better than the other. But that's not how the audience sees it. Like, most people, comedy is very casual. They very much don't give a fuck. They just want to laugh. So they don't know the difference between the greatest comedian in the world and someone who's garbage, but their character is very adorable and likable, and you know, the sanitized ABC friendly knock knock joke comic. You could like them more than the deepest comic on any given night, and that drives me insane. I want to increase comedy literacy. I want people to go like, oh, there's different levels to this, and they're doing that sort of level, and try to appreciate it more. Some of these comics are like, they're bleeding their hearts out on stage. They really are artists that have to make people laugh, like strippers. Bend over, touch your knees. So let's break down some of the different levels to comedy, some of the different ways it goes down. Level one is be funny. At the end of the day, that's your job, is to be funny. You're not there to be sad. You're not there to be high-minded or preachy. You're there to be funny. If you can do all those things and be funny, that's great. That's a higher level. But I don't care how smart you are. I don't care how clever you are. If you're not funny, you're not doing your job. So level one is be funny. And you can be a master at that. And it's very hard to be a master at just being funny. Brian Regan and Jerry Seinfeld are masters at just being funny. And I'll show you why they're different from the next level. So the next level might be, do you take intellectual risk? So it'd be like Bill Hicks, George Carlin. These are people that are trying to change the way people think, which is hard. You're facing opposition. You're not just making them laugh, you're also making them think. But you do have to make them laugh. I think one of George Carlin's flaws was that he didn't make them laugh enough. He became very poetic and very preachy. And the same with Bill Hicks, where I go like, you guys forgot the job. It's not wrong of you to try and get those ideas out there. God bless you. But there is a funny way to do it. I promise you. It's there. It's possible. You just gotta find it. The next level might be, do you take emotional risks? And there's a lot of that right now. What Norm Macdonald called confessional comedians. So this is like, are you talking about having cancer? Are you talking about family members dying? Are you talking about your actual day-to-day life dealing with anxiety or depression or insecurity? And again, go back to rule number one. It's wonderful if you talk about all those things, but it has to be funny. And we've gotten to a point where a lot of times it isn't funny. What we've done is, we've seen people do this at a high, excellent level, like Marc Maron. He's very emotionally risky. He talks about being all kinds of screwed up. He's very vulnerable. It's hard to talk about that stuff. He's growing up in front of us, which, who wants to do that at like 58 or whatever? Like, who wants to be that vulnerable at that age? But he does it, and he's funny when he does it. And people see that, and they go, oh, I'll talk about being depressed, and that makes me as good as Marc Maron. It's like that hip-hop thing of like, I'll come out of nowhere and I'll be the one that really gets them. But a lot of guys, they're talking about these horrible, horrible things, but they're not making it funny at all. They're not even attempting to. They haven't processed the shit that they're going through enough to be giving you any kind of insight into what it is to come out of that or to deal with it. They're just raw. They're a wound in the moment. And I love the attempt. And the only way you get there is to keep doing it. And so anytime I see someone doing it bad, I tell them, just keep going. You know, eventually you will figure out how to get, how to make this funny, or you'll grow up enough that you'll work through the issue and you won't want to talk about it anymore. Either way, it's a win for you to keep processing and working through whatever the fuck you're working through. And you gotta give grace to people that are doing that. Say about comedy, like, you want someone that gets it right, go to church. This is comedy. It's emotionally wounded people. People that are in that transition from their 20s to their 30s, from like being a kid to being a grown-up for the first time. Drinking and bipolar and sexual predators, all kinds of stuff is going on, and they got to process all of it and be better human beings on the other side of it. And that's a lot. So I give comedians a lot of grace. I ask for grace too, because I've screwed up a lot. I'm a reformed supervillain. Takes a lot of ego to do stand-up comedy, and so it's hard to keep that in check. And you know, remember to be humble. Kendrick Lamar's message: be humble. So let's get into some of the behind the scenes on, like, the math behind comedy. My buddy Nelly Bob is thinking about shooting a YouTube series where comics answer questions that open micers have or the new comics have. And he's asked me to be on it, so I've been thinking about it a lot. Like, what advice do you give? So you start out with, you know, your first time on stage. If you've never been to an open mic before, I used to think, like, you just walk around and be funny and someone will tap you on the shoulder and that's how you become a comedian, which is very naive. You start out at the open mic level. There's a website called Badslava, BadSlava.com, and that keeps track of every open mic in the country. So you can find an open mic to do probably every night of the week. Definitely every night of the week if you're in Chicago. And go hang out at open mic. Pete Holmes always says, like, hang out for two or three shows and then go for your first time, because you'll see how bad it is and you'll go, well, I'm better than that. And then you have some time to think about what you're going to say, and you approach your first open mic. Big question is, what's the first thing you say? What do you do when you open yourself? Imagine that you're walking up to a table of strangers. You know, you're at a party, you turn around, there's a table of strangers, they all look at you. What are you going to do? You introduce yourself. You know, you go like, hey, I'm harmless, don't be mean to me, or hey, I'm the alpha, I'm in charge here, or whatever the fuck you are. This is why you should trust me, so hi, I am blah blah blah. And then get into your first joke. Now, the basic joke structure is setup and punchline. So the setup is you're taking them in one direction, and then the punchline is you're taking them in a different direction. A lot of this comes down to linguistic norms. You're going to develop some mutant powers doing stand-up comedy. You're going to develop a hypersensitivity to linguistic and social norms. So a lot of the ways you play with people is, you know, you want every part of your joke to be funny. So rather than just having a dry setup, like I go to the grocery store, you can play with linguistic norms and say, I went to the potato chip factory. That violates the social norm of I went to a grocery store. So you're going to become hyper aware of what are the normal sentences that people use to communicate to one another. And then you're going to find keywords that you can manipulate and switch them out with synonyms that seem like non sequiturs. And this catches the audience off guard. And it gets them invested. They want to know, I didn't see what he's doing there. What is he doing? They're going to pay attention more. So that's a way to make your setup funnier. So your setup goes in one direction and then your punchline goes in another. The easiest way in the world to do this is just take two random things. Example I used before was like a cat and a toaster. Michael, you know what I don't like about toasters? They make my bread feel like a cat's tongue. So the setup, you're going in one direction. You know what I don't like about a toaster? Everybody's thinking they break down, they don't work, they burn half the bread, the temperature setting is bullshit, it doesn't work. And then you relate it to a cat. Nobody sees that coming. So it's a violation of the way that people normally think. Now, there was a scientific theory on comedy that was called benign violation theory. And the theory behind it was that at the center of all comedy is a benign violation of one of your norms, being a linguistic norm, a social norm, a physical norm. And the example they gave is like, if a stranger comes up and tickles you, you're not going to laugh, because that's a violation of your personal space. But if a friend comes over and tickles you, it's a benign violation of your physical space, so you're going to laugh. So they thought at the center of, you know, every joke is a benign violation of some normative behavior pattern, which is what you have to become hypersensitive to. As well as, you know, when you go up there, everybody is staring at you, and you develop an ability to see, like, when they're with you and when they're not with you based on their silence, which is a weird thing. I wish I had a better way to explain that, but that's another superpower you'll develop doing this silly hobby. Now let's talk about why men are funnier than women. Hot topics. From a linguistic point of view, men and women are raised differently. Men are raised to one-up one another, to constantly be linguistically battling one another, whereas women are taught to build a group, to nurture the group. So if a guy says something, another guy will respond with a one-up or trash them. They're constantly in linguistic combat, whereas a woman will say, like, well, how did you feel? And how did that make you feel? And I felt the same way, and try to build, like, a bond with them. These are patterns inherent in our gender norms in our society. I was originally an anthropologist. So these linguistic norms bleed into our communication skills and our communication patterns. And when men and women are starting in comedy, men are more aggressive and more willing to break social norms, whereas women are more likely to be looking for empathy, which is less funny than a victim. Now, all of this is in theory. Everybody's unique. Everybody does what they do. Some people grew up with all brothers. Some people just didn't fall for the okey-doke. Women are people. They're just as capable as men, and some of them are a lot funnier than all the others. But that's a reason, a scientific reason, you might look at comedy and understand why you're more drawn toward one gender of comics than the other. Or maybe why women don't get what men do. I like what Ari said in his special, that women have to process 40% more emotion than men do. Men are much more cruel. Women are going to see something and they're going to think about it and think about it and think about it before they get to what we just jumped to, because we just gave up on all those emotions. We're a bunch of savages. I love it. If you don't understand what Tough Crowd and Opie and Anthony meant to comedy, I'm probably not for you. Going back to what Toy said, like, I'm gonna have the smallest audience ever. It's gonna be impossible for me to ever make it. The best I can hope for is every once in a while enough of you will be listening, then I can put out a CD and get a nice paycheck from it. But I'm probably gonna have to be a working stiff, because even that is gonna be a long ways away. But listen to me instead of them. I'm trying to set some standards with comedy and explore emotional and intellectual ideas in a way that's still funny. And I'm trying to do new stuff every week. And I hope that you guys enjoy that. So when you start out, the setup punchline is the easiest joke structure to work with as you're building your first 5 minutes. It's the amount of time you'll normally get at open mics. Now, I know everybody wants to be rich and famous and discovered immediately and just be whisked off to stardom, but it's probably not going to happen. You're probably going to have to spend a lot of time at the open mic. You know, they say about 10 years. I'm at 8 years. I'm pretty good, but I can't do a solid hour of the stuff I want to do yet. To do an hour is a lot of work. It's more than you think it is. So when you're starting out, those are some good parameters to work within, but you got to realize what you're learning is how to be comfortable on stage, and what's funny about you, and what you want to talk about. some of the best advice I can give is don't look for funny things to talk about. Make the things you want to talk about funny. Anything can be funny, from abortions to dead babies to economics and political shenanigans. It can all be made funny. People have done it. You can look it up. So you got to figure out who you are. If you don't know who you are, most people in the age range starting stand-up comedy don't. Get rid of everything you're not, and who you are should show up in the end. And don't feel like you have to have it all figured out. We're all processing things all the time. You know, you can know a lot about the world, but not be emotionally developed. You can be emotionally developed, but be completely ignorant of the world around you. Everybody's just trying to get it together. We're all just people. It'll be okay. So as you go up there, you're going to learn what's funny about you. I talk very funny, because I talk like all the people I grew up with, and I grew up with a lot of different voices. English accents, Mississippi accents, Colorado hillbillies, people in Illinois, you know, using all kinds of extra S's and stuff. I talk like a whole bunch of people, and that violates social norms, and it works out for me. So one of the things that's funny about me is just the way that I talk about things. You don't have to do that kind of gimmick, but be aware of the way that you look. Be aware of the way that you move in social situations. So throughout your day-to-day, be aware of your body language. And then when you're on stage, if you want to make a point, know how to violate that body language. if you're a guy that doesn't move around a lot wildly, suddenly start gesturing and people will be like, oh my god, I didn't expect him to do that. Or if you're the other way, if you're very expressive and you're always talking with your hands and suddenly you want to make a point, just fall to dead, you know, arms at your side, staring forward. you can't even. I can't even. I'm done. It's a very funny way to make a point as you're going through this. So those kinds of gestures are called act outs. If you use them all the time, it could be exhausting. I think Dane Cook's the guy that did that a lot. But more, it's like it's a tool you break out from time to time to help push the joke along. At the core of every joke is momentum. Like I say, you want your setup to be funny, and then you want your payoff to be funnier, and then if you can add another punchline to that, that's called a tag. And if you can bring it all the way back around, that's called a callback. That's one of the best tricks. That's what all the hot comics that's what all the hot comics are doing. They're doing these callbacks. So as you learn different techniques, it's kind of like music, where it's like you got to learn the rules so you can break the rules. And as you develop a better understanding of yourself, of your physical language and appearance, of the way you think, of the way others think, it becomes easier and easier for you to just express yourself and just talk on stage rather than having to manufacture wild premises. Which some people, that's all they get into it for, is they love being absurd. They're artsy, weird people, and God bless them. But I think it's great when you get to develop who you are as a human being on stage, and you learn how to violate the way people talk or the way that people expect you to act. And that allows you to have vulnerability because you're playing with their perception of you. And you can get away with some very deep ideas, and you can make them funny. So let's close out with some philosophy on funny. At the core of every joke, at the center of every joke, a benign violation, there's a victim or an acknowledgement that something is wrong. Now, people might be laughing because they want there to be a victim, or they might be laughing because they don't want there to be a victim. But either way, they're acknowledging that something is wrong. There's a break in the social norms. And that's one of the deeper things that you can get from comedy, is they really are pointing out what is wrong. Like Jon Stewart would say, like, it's not left and right, it's be reasonable. You know, liberals and conservatives both love their families. There is a core humanness and a core truth that funny can get to. Or at least I like to hope and believe that it can. Now, funny is one of the rare pieces of free speech that still exist. You will still get every kind of free speech in funny, and you'll be acknowledging a lot of shit that's wrong. But that's all part of funny. Like, there's some really funny racist jokes that acknowledge a victim, whether you want him to be there or you don't want him to be there. And I think that's important. It's important that we always remember that there is some truth out there, that we are living in a shared reality, that we can be better people and we can acknowledge what's wrong and hopefully move on and not be wrong. You know, develop as a society. I'll tell you real quick why I love Patrice O'Neal. You know, a big black guy that talks like a pimp. I'm a white guy from the suburbs. What could we possibly have in common? But within his pimp rap, everything that he talked about, he related it to the human animal, which is what I was in search of when I was studying anthropology. You know, as I'm developing as a human being, I'm trying to be a better person. I'm trying to understand the world around me. And I thought understanding the world, finding out, are there things that every culture does? Are there things that are innately human? And Patrice would always take it back to, you know, away from the religious norms, the social norms, the whatever you think. This is about men and women fucking. This is about, you know, that animal that's, that wants to do what it wants to do. And it deserves some dignity and respect because it's part of all of us. And if you're ever struggling for an angle on a joke, that's a good way to look at it, is take it down to the most human level, which is, you know, eating, survival, and fucking. How does that apply to this situation? Some advice is, like, if you do a lot of topical material, those jokes only are good for a week or two, maybe. Maybe a night or two. And then the world moves on. We live in a society that processes information very quickly, and the top story this minute is not the top story in 5 minutes. But within every topical joke that you want to make, within that thing that you found wrong in society, there are larger themes you can point out. This is, you know, a microcosm of, or a macrocosm of a cause. I don't know. I'm goofing up my words here. It's a smaller version of a bigger thing that's going on, and you can take your joke to that level of the bigger thing, and that joke will last a lot longer. It'll be what they call evergreen. So rather than talking about a police shooting, you talk about police shootings. Rather than talking about a injustice, you talk about the systemic version of that injustice. And I think that's a more indelible and better way to help change the social consciousness, because once the idea is out there, it just becomes common sense, and that's when people start to get sick of it and they start to get tired of it. And there's a lot of stuff out there that we're pretending is serious, and it's very silly and it's very dumb, and it needs to just be common sense to think differently. But I'll leave that to you to explore on your own. Or keep listening to my podcast and find out what things I'm like, this is ridiculous. Can we just get past this already? Can we be better people? Can we be humans? So that's what I'm doing with my podcast. That was some advice for new comics, new comedians. And hopefully next week we'll be back with Leroy. We'll talk about the Comedy Shrine. And thank you guys for hanging out. Please spread the word. Spread the gospel. Start holding people to standards and exploring, like, what level of comedy are these guys? And who are the good guys? And who are not so good? And who really means it? And if you're into that sort of thing, support the people that mean it. You know, geniuses should be popping up all around us. We're living in a world where, with the phones and podcasts and YouTube, you can be your own production company. You can be Saturday Night Live. So people that have the best ideas should be popping up all around us. And we should just be supporting the best ideas rather than who has the most clout or who you've seen on TV. But it's very rare that that stuff pops up. Things I'll tell you to check out, Wisecracker is an amazing YouTube channel. Go check out Wisecracker. It's one of those underground things where I'm like, this is better than anything that's on TV. I love this. And if you have different things like that, tweet them at me. Let me know. I've really been loving the TV show Preacher. I've been reading the comic book. Alright. I gotta wrap this up. I'm just rambling. My name's Ian Ellis at Chicago Open Mic. I'm also on the Eskimo Bros Squadcast podcast. Recording a new episode tonight. Find us on SoundCloud, iTunes, everywhere. Eventually we'll be on YouTube. like that's a big thing to do. And follow my podcast, cnlstuffpodbean.com. Share it. Tell people why you listen. If you enjoyed it, like, oh, he made me think about this or that. Or if you disagree, let me know. I'm happy to have people on the show. And if you're some renegade outlaw comedian that's like, hey, I think I'm dope, nobody's paying attention to me, send me a clip. And if I like it, I'll put it up. Maybe I'll talk about it or I'll talk to you. Like, let's just find the best stuff and do something cool together while we're here. All right, y'all. Thank you for listening. Peace.
I wonder what you would do if you had the power to dream at night any dream you wanted to dream. Would I suppose start out by fulfilling all your wishes? You could design for yourself what would be the most ecstatic life. Love affairs, banquets, dancing girls, wonderful journeys, gardens, music beyond belief. And then after a couple of months of this sort of thing, at 75 years a night, you'd be getting a little taste for something different. You would get more and more adventurous, and you would make further and further out gambles as to what you would dream. And finally, you would dream where you are now.
All right, guys, your next comic is a very funny guy. You can see him at the Comedy Shrine in Aurora. He's a regular there. He runs his own podcast. Please give it up for Ian Ellis.
Guys, I showed up looking like this basement. For years, I thought I was alone. And I'm glad you're here. I don't know how you got here. I wandered in on a shroom trip. I hope you guys are old enough to hear these jokes. It's like if the Catch a Predator was in the Cheddar's basement. I got a prescription for Adderall. It's not my prescription. I have possession of it. People drink to get fucked up. I'm already fucked up. Drink it to get some quiet. Shut my eyes and have peace for 5 minutes. People out there are trying to find themselves. I'm like, how the fuck did you lose you? I've tried everything. Drugs, alcohol, anonymous sex. Can't get rid of me. Adderall helps, but now, you know, I'm super focused. There'll be some shit. All right, Bill Cosby's in the back of the room. I'm not saying you should watch your drinks, but if you're missing in this basement, it might not be the first unsolved case that started here. The neighbor's nephew just got home. Also, there's a GoPro camera directly above my shoulder. No sudden movements. Using all the saw traps. Saw the second Cloverfield. It was fucking weird. Just being watched. By dreamy eyes. I'm getting married. I have a fiance. I'm sorry. He's trying to turn me like a gay vampire. Are you sure?
complexion. It's probably sparkling. Vampires. You guys ever realize that my bike's hard? It's fucking harder than it needs to be. I think that's how religion got started. I went to a shaman and they're like, hey dude, why is life a troll? It seems like everything on this planet is trying to kill us. There's not a square foot of this planet that isn't trying to kill it. If it's not the lions, tigers, and bears, disease will get you. Alright? If you don't believe me, take a stroll through the rainforest. You're not invited. A mosquito will take your life. I don't care what plans you had. Now you have typhoid. You're not welcome. Shaman was like, that's some heavy shit. Alright, so no good bitch ain't an apple. None of these bitches, bitch. Stupid answer. We don't get better answers today. Like, why is Trump almost president? Legislation and districting. That bitch probably stole something. No, you can't trust these hoes. I'm not misogynistic. I love my girlfriend. His braces. She's older than me. Not these girls. If I was just 25 years younger, I'd invite you to the ice cream social. Probably be tubbier. I grew into this hot mess. What the fuck was I talking about? She has braces. I love them because they're like lingerie for teeth. So every time she smiles, I'm like, oh baby, you got dressed up for me. You guys have been amazing. My name is Ian. I love you very much.
Ian Ellis, everybody.
All my friends are heathens, take it slow. Wait for them to ask you who you know. Don't make any sudden moves.
You don't know the half of the abuse.
What could you take?
What could you take? What could you take? What could you take? What dimension of being lost, of abandonment of your power, what dimension of that could you stand? You would dream the dream of living the life that you are actually living today. That would be within the infinite multiplicity of choices you would have, of playing that you weren't God. Because the whole nature of the Godhead, according to this idea, is to play that he's not. So in this idea then, everybody is fundamentally the ultimate reality, not God in a politically kingly sense, but God in the sense of being the self, the deep down basic whatever there is, and you're all that, only you're pretending you're not.
This is my part, nobody else speak. This is my part, nobody else speak.
Let us suppose that I'm the patient and you are the students and the doctors, and I suffer from what you would call the delusion that I'm God.
When someone comes up and says something like, I am a god, everybody says,
who does he think he is?
And therefore, you might want to do something about me or with me, or humor me or ask me questions. And so I'm perfectly willing to submit to your examination and your treatment and invite you to help yourselves.
When did you become God?
Now.
When you married me?
No.
If you were God now, what were you yesterday?
Now.
God.
You don't become God.
Am I also God?
Yes.
God, why do you hide from the sight of so many?
Why do you hide? It's for the same reason you're hiding.
I just told you who I thought I was. A God. I just told you. That's who I think I am. Would it have been better if I had a song that said, I am a nigga? Or if I had a song that said, I'm a gangster. Or if I had a song that said, I'm a pimp. All those colors and patinas fit better on a person like me, right? But to say you are a god, how could you say that? How could you have that mentality?
This little light of mine, glory be to God, yeah. I'ma make sure that they go where they can't go. If they don't wanna ride, I'ma still give them raincoats. Know what God said when he made the first rainbow? Just notice at the end of fucking lane for the intro. I'm just having fun with it. You know that a nigga was lost. I laugh in my head cause I bet that my ex looking back like a pillar of salt. Cause they flipped the script on your ass like Wesley and Spike. You cannot mess with the light. Look at the channel from 79.
We on a ultra light beam. We on a ultra light beam. This is a God dream. This is a God dream. This is everything.
Hallelujah.
Everything.
I'm trying to keep my faith.
Yes,
but I'm looking for more. Somewhere I can feel safe. And in my holy
world. Father, this prayer's for everyone that feels they're not good enough. This prayer's for everybody that feels that they're too messed up. For everyone that feels they said I'm sorry too many times. You can never go too far when you can't come back home again. That's why I need help.